The following program, Normal Show Live, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate for the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate or encourage any illegal activity and advise all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws by visiting normal.org, N-O-R-M-L.org. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers of Normal Show Live are their own and do not necessarily reflect the philosophy and policies of Normal. Listener discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it,
and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
To the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws presents...
We love the earth.
Normal Show Live, Marijuana Nation. Now, here's your host, Normal's Outreach Coordinator... Russ Belville.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome. It is Monday, May 17th, 2010, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Thanks for joining us here for our internet entertainment news and information program by, for, and about the cannabis community. We're here every weekday, Monday through Friday at 1 p.m. Pacific, with replays at 3, 5, 7, and 9. And for more information, check out the Stash blog at stash.normal.org. And I am happy to say, joining me here in the studio on the left, pushing the buttons and turning the knobs, our own Ganja John.
I'm bringing back some order.
Bringing back some order in the court. Relatively free of opioid painkillers and a little bit of pain.
I'm actually 100% free of opioid painkillers. I am 100% covered in marijuana salve and 100% stoned.
So. There we go. So the cannabis has ruled the day. And joining us in our virtual studio in beautiful Astoria, Oregon, our good friend and my half-half sister, Cannabis Carrie.
Hi, guys. It's so good to have you. John.
We missed you. I missed you. He didn't miss you, but I did.
Something like that. Yeah, Carrie, like that. Welcome back to the show. And Carrie brings us our headlines right after the first break here on the show. So, Carrie, what are we looking for in the news today?
Well, we've talked about it before, but I wanted to talk about a specific case in Michigan where we have someone who is fighting a DUI charge due to some THC in his system. We're also going to look at the economics of the Emerald Triangle. They're not doing so good down there. We're going to break that down for you. And also, this is the beginning, the kickoff to Hemp History Week. So we have a hemp headline every day this week, plus a few hemp facts of the day.
All right. We'll take a great look at hemp and this. That goes along with the introduction of the Industrial Hemp Farming Act. Ron Paul is on it again, Republican from Texas, and we'll get you all of that in the news coming up to the first break. Also today for our Daily Toker Tunes, it is Roots Monday. We'll be giving you some music from the fantastically named group Uncle Bummer and the Midnight Strummers. Love the name. And they got a song called The Ballad of Humboldt. At the bottom of the hour, we're going to be speaking with Normal's founder and current legal counsel, Keith Stropp, and we're going to get his view on what's happening in California and the future of legalization in the United States. And then at 45 after the hour, some radical ranting about the rise of paramilitary SWAT raids in America. This culminating also in this weekend's tragic news that we'll be breaking here on Normal Show Live. The shooting death in Detroit by police during a raid of a 7-year-old girl by the name of Ayanna Jones. We'll talk all about that at 45 after. Plus, we'll have a little bit of discussion on last weekend's talk on the denial of organ transplants to medical marijuana patients, a subject near and dear to our heart with our own Ganja John here, who was laid out, so we didn't get your opinions on it. We'll talk a little bit about that, huh?
It'll be fun.
All right. Coming up, all that and more here on Normal Show Live. You can also download the program from our blog at stash.normal.org. Thanks for joining us. We're right back after
You're
this.
Listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Oh.
Hello, I'm Radical Russ Belville, Outreach Coordinator for Normal and host of Normal Show Live. Medical marijuana is legal in 14 states today, and I encourage you to visit MarijuanaDoctors.com to find a physician to help you obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in your state. In most medical marijuana states, patients qualify with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms such as multiple sclerosis, and other conditions which vary by state. Learn which conditions are covered in your state at MarijuanaDoctors.com. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, MarijuanaDoctors.com will help you find a physician online or by phone to obtain a permit for medical marijuana. MarijuanaDoctors.com is fully transparent and HIPAA compliant. Call 866-996-9333 today or visit MarijuanaDoctors.com. That's 866-996-9333 by phone or online at MarijuanaDoctors.com.
Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, consumer cannabis. It's time for this week's Normal News with Cannabis Carry.
Timothy Conant was driving on a cold Michigan night on February 11th when he lost control of his truck and struck a tree. His friend Richard Wallington died in the crash. Last week, prosecutors leveled manslaughter and operating under the influence causing death charges against him because there was alcohol and a trace of marijuana in his system the night of the accident. Conant's attorney, David Dodge, is arguing that his client has a chance of beating the felony allegations because they don't believe either charge fits. Mr. Conant recognized the biggest loss is that of his good friend that's gone, but he feels the slippery Michigan roads are to blame, not impaired driving. Conant had a residual presence of THC in his system from earlier smoking, which he contends did not affect his driving ability when he hit a patch of ice around 11:30 p.m. He also had below the legal limit of 0.08 alcohol in his system, according to a test conducted at the hospital after the accident. His attorney will argue that the presence of marijuana no longer guarantees an ability to charge a person for being under the influence in the state of Michigan. He cites a decision being challenged at the State Court of Appeals last year from Berry County Circuit Court Judge James Fisher that questioned the admissibility and standard regarding THC. In that case, Justin Malik turned his vehicle in front of a motorcycle driven by an off-duty sheriff's deputy, Christopher Yonkers, on October 17th in 2008. Yonkers died in the crash, and tests later showed that Malik had a 0.01 blood alcohol content from one beer he drank after work. He also admitted to smoking marijuana hours before the crash, according to the police. Judge Fisher, in his ruling, cited the state's voter-enacted Medical Marijuana Act conflicts with state statutes that say the drug has no medicinal value. In his ruling on that case, Judge Fisher wrote, quote, "The presence of marijuana may be detected for days, but the impairment lasts only a few hours. The law criminalizes driving a motor vehicle days or weeks after consuming marijuana, long after any impairment has vanished." Timothy Conant is looking at 15 years in prison and will face a judge in Kent County District Court on May 25th.
The Michigan case is really tough. I'm checking out Normal's DUID statutes up here. We keep track of these states that have what are called a per se zero tolerance drug driving law. And what this means is if they catch you with any metabolites of cannabis in your system whatsoever, you are considered to have been impaired, whether or not you actually were impaired. And looking here, according to our website, it says cannabis metabolites are excluded under the statute language of the drug driving law. However, Michigan's Supreme Court has ruled that cannabis metabolites are included as well. And this is a case, Michigan v. Derer. So according to the case law here and the decisions of the Michigan court, cannabis metabolites still count. The punishment for this, for having the cannabis metabolites, are not more than 360 hours and or imprisonment for not more than 93 days, 360 hours of community service, and then not more than 93 days, and or a fine of not less than $100 or more than $500. And there's more here about, you know, repeated violations and so on. Again, this is not to say that anybody is saying you should, you know, rip some bong hits and see how well you do on the test later on, but it shows how unfair these zero tolerance laws are. There's no flexibility here in determining determining, like the man says, whether or not the roads were slick at the time. It's a danger that we all face as cannabis consumers because, you know, we've got that target on our backs. If we get into an accident that anyone else would get into on a slick road, a crowded freeway, whatever it might be, immediately we are going to be suspect based on the inactive metabolites in our system rather than the conditions on the road or the drivers around us. This is why we've got to fight against these zero tolerance laws, and let's judge people by their actual impairment. Were they actually impaired? If someone can be below a 0.08 and considered not impaired, then certainly we've got to have more tolerance for cannabis and specifically cannabis metabolites.
The business side of legal marijuana is slowly taking shape after decades of black market cannabis economics. NPR did an in-depth study this week about the plight of illegal growers in one of the richest and most well-known American bud cultivation areas. Since the 70s, illegal marijuana cultivation has been an economic lifeblood for the three Northern California counties that make up the Emerald Triangle. The war on drugs has helped support the local economy by artificially increasing the street price for their number one underground crop. 30 years ago, there was rampant poverty in the area, and many residents were living on welfare due to the lack of employment opportunities in the small communities that dot the Emerald Triangle. Marijuana made it possible to be part of the middle class, and the local economics benefited by the new money being spent at the grocery stores and shops. Even though California has had medical marijuana since 1996, the effects on prices of illegal marijuana is finally catching up. Some growers say that as recently as December, things were still pretty upbeat, but lately the mood has darkened, according to Tim Blake, the host of the Emerald Cup annual growing contest. The price of good quality marijuana from Northern California that used to command as much as $5,000 a pound is now selling for under $2,000 a pound. In Northern California, the supply is finally catching up with the demand. Legal medical marijuana is lowering the price just as in other agricultural industries when there is a rise in the number of producers. The black market economy is correcting itself as cannabis slowly becomes a legal commodity. One man was recently arrested and had 800 pounds of processed marijuana in his home. He told officers that he just didn't know what to do with it. It isn't just the growers either. In this part of the state, there are people who supplement their income by trimming, gardening, and distributing the crops, leading to the broader community feeling the rippling effects of falling prices.
You know, here at Normal, we support the consumers primarily of marijuana, of cannabis, people who consume cannabis, but we also support the people who cultivate and distribute cannabis. We are for all cannabis, and nobody deserves to go to jail for marijuana, buying, selling, whatever, right? It needs to be a legal and regulated crop. However, let's keep in mind that the only reason the prices were as high as they were was because of the risk of prohibition, and that risk of prohibition means somebody's life gets ruined by police, by courts, by charges, by having a record. So no economy deserves to flourish or even exist based on locking people up. Now, that said, if we can end this locking of people up, the people in the Emerald Triangle, in these Humboldt County areas and so on, Mendocino and so on, have nothing to fear and everything to gain from legalization. I had a big conversation this weekend with a longtime grower, and we were talking about this, and he pointed out that if the Walmart of weed comes, the McDonald's of weed, he says, let it come, because you know how they're going to be. They're not going to care about the plant. They're not going to have very much consideration about each plant. It's going to be one large crop. They'll harvest the whole thing at once. They'll trim the whole thing at once. They'll send the whole thing out. Maybe these plants over here, they needed a little more time. Tough. They're going to be pulled. Maybe these plants over there, they needed to cure a little longer. Tough. It's time for them to be processed. It's going to be a bulk operation. And that the small-time, hand-picked, hand-trimmed organic grower will always be able to compete with that by offering a superior product. He even has the catch line for it. He says, don't thief the keef. His thing is that these big time producers are going to be, you know, running them through the mechanical trimmers and all of these devices to get a fast process of their bud. They're going to lose all the keef in the meantime. Compared to all the hand growers and hand trimmers, you're going to give you the best possible quality. So there's always going to be a place for the fine producer of these goods. Just like Ernest and Julio Gallo's boxes of wines didn't put Napa Valley out of business, just because Budweiser's out there doing billions of gallons of beer, that doesn't mean that Portland, Oregon doesn't have a thriving microbrew community. There's always going to be a place for the people who care for the plant and the people who produce the best thing of it. Now, I pointed out, based on my own personal history, I'm an old pro musician, right? I used to play in clubs for 15 years. And when karaoke first came out, this was something we were all concerned about in our community. Oh my God, karaoke's coming out. They're going to get rid of bands. They're going to put in karaoke machines. And to a large extent, that has actually happened. But what we've always found is that karaoke didn't put any good musicians out of business. It put a whole lot of bad ones out of business. And perhaps legal marijuana does the same thing. It puts bad growers out of business. It puts people who don't care about the plant out of business, but the people who have always been good growers and always supplied good cannabis will always have business in America.
And this week is the beginning of Hemp History Week, and hemp activists are holding events across the country to celebrate hemp heritage and support American farmers who want the right to grow industrial hemp again. We will be covering industrial hemp-related stories every day this week to help recognize the need for the cannabis movement to be more informed about industrial hemp and to spark passion about the legalizing efforts of this amazing plant. Republican Congressman Ron Paul is once again seeking to allow for the commercial farming of industrial hemp. House Bill 1866, the Industrial Hemp Farming Act of 2010, will exclude low-potency varieties of marijuana from federal prohibition. If approved, this measure will grant state legislatures the authority to license and regulate the commercial production of hemp as an industrial and agricultural commodity. Several states, including North Dakota, Montana, Vermont, and Oregon, have enacted regulations to allow for the cultivation of hemp under state law. However, none of these laws can be implemented without federal approval. Passage of H.R. 1866 would remove existing federal barriers and allow states that wish to regulate commercial hemp production the authority to do so. In a statement delivered on May 9th to the House of Representatives, Representative Paul said that he first introduced the Industrial Hemp Farming Act, H.R. 1866, 5 years ago to end the federal government's ban on American farmers growing hemp, and despite its American history, industrial hemp is the only crop that Americans can buy and sell, but not farm in the United States. He is asking the federal government to change the law to allow them to grow this profitable crop, as American farmers have through most of our nation's history. The United States is the only developed nation that fails to cultivate industrial hemp as an economic crop, and many American companies specialize in hemp goods but must import hemp material. American consumers are paying artificially high retail prices for hemp products. So please, write or call your members of Congress today and tell them to end the federal prohibition on industrial hemp.
You know, one thing about the hemp issue that does kind of, if you're going to look for a silver lining in the banning of hemp, it's kind of a tacit admission that our cops are idiots. That they can't tell the difference between an industrial hemp plant and a big bushy cannabis bush, right? They can't tell the difference between a long, tall, reedy, you know, seedy, stock-laden plant like a hemp plant versus a short, bushy, bud-laden, sticky, smelly cannabis plant. Although the cops in China and Australia and Canada and most of Europe and all these other places, they seem to have no problem keeping cannabis illegal while still allowing their farmers to grow hemp. Only in America do we ban something because it looks like a drug. Because it sounds like a drug. Oh my God, it's the same family. We got to ban the whole thing. It's American zero tolerance at its worst. And furthermore, it's, if you think about it, it's like a legalized subsidy here. It's like a legal subsidy for the hemp industries of all these other countries. Because like Kerry said, we're allowed to buy the hemp. We can have hemp backpacks, and we can buy Dr. Bronner's magic soaps, and we can buy all these things made of hemp. We can get the raw material hemp, right? But we can't actually grow it ourselves. We can buy it and sell it all we like. We can't grow it ourselves. This hat I am wearing, and the signature hat that I've had for so long, this one and the tan one, are 100% hemp. This is a 100% hemp hat. People walk by, they say, nice hat. I say, yeah, 100% hemp. I'm a true pothead. And then we go on and talk about normal and marijuana and so on. It's sparked a lot of conversations. But I can't get any more of these hats. They are made by the New York Hat Company. And I called them up to say, hey, I'd like to get some more of your hemp hats. They said, I'm sorry, we can't get you anymore. We don't make them anymore. It's too expensive to import the hemp. It's ridiculous. We need to end this. And I'm glad that all this week we'll be taking a look at hemp facts and hemp law in this country. Oh, John, it's time for a break, my man.
It definitely is time for a break.
Okay, everybody on the East Coast has a special break. Everybody else, pretend like it's that special hour. We'll be right back after this with Roots Monday.
It's 20 after the hour, and we have to take a short break, if you know what I mean. Please support these sponsors who support Normal Show Live.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? Reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would send you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
Law420.com. Hello, I'm Russ Belville, Outreach Coordinator for Normal. In my job, I read literally hundreds of headlines each month involving nonviolent, productive citizens whose lives are ripped apart by a marijuana or drug arrest. Many citizens could avoid arrest by refusing police searches and remaining silent, but police are well-trained to confuse and intimidate. That's why you have a right to speak to an attorney before answering any police questions. I hope you never need to exercise that right, but if you do, make your first call to the law offices of John C. Lucy IV. John Lucy is an accomplished criminal defense attorney with expertise in Oregon's medical marijuana law. John Lucy understands and respects cannabis and drug consumers of all backgrounds. Call John C. Lucy IV at 503-227-6000 or visit in downtown Portland. Address available at law420.com. That's John C. Lucy IV at 503-227-6000 or visit law420.com today.
And now, a message from former President George W. Bush to remind the American people of our responsibility in our nation's war on certain American citizens using non-pharmaceutical, non-alcoholic, tobacco-free drugs.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
That's right, America, use less drugs. Put down the Prozac, the Vioxx, and the Levitra, and turn to the herb. Use less drugs. Our national policy is no longer just say no. It's now just slow down.
You get me too high. I overanalyze. If you've ever been too high, then you can sympathize. You get me too high. I've said some silly thing, and that's the reason why.
It's time for your daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Our PodSafe music is donated by freedom-loving musicians who support our goal of ending adult marijuana prohibition. Today we bring you tunes for Roots Monday, our celebration of the music that evolved into the popular modern music of today. We pick the best of blues, country, folk, and jazz with a 420 feel and serve it up for you every Monday. Brought to you by PlanetFantastic.com and Bella Blue Tie-Dye Fashions. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on Normal Show Live, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now, here's some great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tunes. All right, everybody, welcome back from break, 23 after the hour, and Cannabis Carrie wears more than one hat here at Normal Show Live. She is also our music editor for Roots Monday. She's got a great show on coastradio.org. Is that right, Carrie?
That's right. Coastradio.org.
Coastradio.org. KMUN is the station up there. Astoria Seaside. Some of the listeners here have been checking out your show, and they've reported back that they love it.
Well, that's fun. There's not much for the headbangers in there,
no.
But if 70s AM gold is your speed, come on in. We'll have a great time.
You don't spin Undercover Angel by Alan O'Day by any chance, do you?
No, but maybe if someone did a nice acoustic cover of it, I would be thrilled to spin that one.
A nice folksy version, like America style, you know.
There we go. Okay, Carrie, what do we got for our tune today?
Well, today's Toker Tune was actually emailed to us. These are my favorite ones because they're easy to find in my inbox as opposed to out there in the internet. But it was sent to us from Jay Rasmani, and together with his New York college buddies, Stan Merlmestein and Alan Becky, I hope I'm saying those right, they make up the musical group Uncle Bummer and the Midnight Strummers. Today's toker-friendly tune is called Ballad of Humboldt and is all about that region of the country that produces America's best bud, the Emerald Triangle, and more specifically, Humboldt County, California. It's pretty cool because it speaks about the battle between growers and the CAMP team, that's the Campaign Against Marijuana Planting, that looks for outdoor grows in the region every year. Rasmani describes their sound as their own summer of love, attracting hordes of happy hippies while angering local merchants and police. The music is pure folk storytelling that might have been written back in the day when you purchased your smoking lids and your Arlo Guthrie album cover was stained with melted patchouli candle wax. But since CAMP wasn't founded until the 80s, we can assume that this song has been written since then.
Right.
You can check out their Facebook page. We've got some links. Or GarageBand. There's also a link on there for more Uncle Bummer and the Midnight Strummers.
All right. Well, here it is. Uncle Bummer and the Midnight Strummers.
You're listening to Radio KMUD KMUD. Now the news. CAMP, the California Anti-Marijuana Patrol, is mobilized at Highway 101 at Redway headed west. Marijuana growers, get out of the fields.
Haggards and cringers are out on the fringes. KMUD will get you if you mobilize too soon. You don't have to hate them to decapitate them. Once you were warriors and now you're buffoons. In summer you'll go in, see where it's growing. Sneak up upon them by the light of the moon. You'll chop them and trash them, burn them and bash them. Once you were warriors, now you're buffoons. Hippies and deadheads, that's who you find, living in Humboldt where they have peace of mind. While CAMP's got the latest surveillance balloon. Once you were warriors, now you're buffoons. You'll come on like locusts, try hocus pocus, fly all around like some souped-up cartoon. An alien invasion, no small equation. Once you were warriors, now you're buffoons. Hippies and deadheads, that's who you find, living in Humboldt where they have peace of mind. While CAMP's got the latest surveillance balloon. Once you were warriors, now you're buffoons. The search for marijuana is a cause you think you're gonna wreak holy havoc, puffing on a bomb. You'll injure and insult us, and just to prove you're pompous, you go and bust our favorite comic Tommy Chong. Hippies and deadheads, that's who you find, living in Humboldt where they have peace of mind. While CAMP's got the latest surveillance balloons. Once you were warriors, now you're buffoons. This tale has no ending, the results are pending. We'll see if you campers are sent back to school to learn just what we see and how we love the doobie. Once you were warriors, now you're buffoons. Said, once you were warriors, now you're buffoons.
Uncle Bummer and the Midnight Strummers with the Ballad of Humboldt. Sorry for talking over the beginning of that. Didn't know it had a hot open, but thanks so much for that email. And again, if you got music that you'd like to have played here on Normal Show Live, you can send it to me right here at stash@normal.org. We'll send it to the music editors, and who knows, you might hear yourself on Normal Show Live.
It only comes twice a day, but I don't care.
It's 420 somewhere.
All right, time for our normal cannabis community calendar, which you can find at normal.org/calendar. Tomorrow, Tuesday, May 18th, there is a weekly medicating event taking place at the Phoenix Cafe in Hazel Park, Michigan. Check out our calendar for details. Also, in Albuquerque, New Mexico, Hemp TV is on their cable outlet channel. Check that out by calling 505-880-0666 if you want tickets to the show. On Wednesday, May 19th, James Stacy is going to trial in San Diego, California in courtroom 15 to see whether he will be allowed to present a medical defense in his trial. The more folks we can have showing up there in the courtroom, the better. So check that out. Also check out our site, normalsc.org, Normal Southern California. Also on Wednesday, May 19th, Benzie County Normal in Michigan is meeting. They have their third Wednesday meeting of the month for a potluck dinner and a movie. You can call Reverend Steve at 231-882-4496 for further information. And Tulsa Normal in Tulsa, Oklahoma will be meeting at the Hardesty Regional Library. Check out tulsanormal.org for details. Thursday, May 20th, Schoolcraft County Normal is meeting at the Hypnotic Hydroponics Store in Manistique, Michigan. Check them out at minormal.org. And Philly Normal, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, will be meeting at the A Space, phillynormal.org for more information. And coming up on the weekend, Saturday, May 22nd, Oregon Normal is having their cardholders meeting. There have been some changes with Oregon Normal. Check out their website at ornorml.org for the latest. Cincinnati, Miami Valley Normal is having their meeting. Check out mvnormal.org this Saturday. And Denver's free Mark Emery rally will be taking place at the U.S. Courthouse. There's also a free Mark Emery rally taking place in Seattle as well on May 22nd. For more information, you can email me at stash@normal.org, or again, check our cannabis community calendar at norml.org/calendar. All right, when we come back, we will be speaking with the founder of Normal, Keith Straub, from his offices in Washington, D.C., on the future of legalization with California voting this November. You're listening to Normal Show Live. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
I'm Alan St. Pierre, Executive Director of Normal. Have you heard about the new super pot that's supposedly 20 times more potent than your father's Woodstock weed? Don't believe the hype. Marijuana's THC potency has always varied, even in the 60s and 70s. And the drug czar's numbers are full of, well, exaggerations. While no intoxicant is harmless, cannabis is non-toxic and far safer than alcohol. No matter how much you smoke, of whatever potency, you cannot die of a marijuana overdose. Potency is irrelevant anyway. More potent pot just means you smoke less of it, meaning less harmful smoke in your lungs. This is a prime example of harm reduction in action. Besides, the government already allows the prescription of THC pills. Its commercial brand name is Marinol, and it's 100% potent. Meanwhile, the federal government won't allow dying people to use natural marijuana, no matter what the potency. Does this make sense to you? Learn the facts about pot. Visit NORML.org today.
Starfish Designs, makers of the original Gandalf.
I'm Radical Russ, and when I want to relax, I always have my 17-inch long original Gandalf from Starfish Designs nearby. The hand-blown borosilicate glass is strong and easy to clean, and the design is sleek and sophisticated. Starfish Designs are available from Bend, Oregon at a glass retailer near you. For locations, call 541-788-GLASS. That's 541-788-4527. The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws is thousands of cannabis consumers just like you, represented by our Board of Directors, a group of men and women selected for their expertise in the legal, medical, social, scientific, and political aspects of cannabis and marijuana law reform. Learn from the wisdom of the most dedicated supporters of reform in America, your Normal Board of Directors. Welcome back, everyone. 34 after the hour, and even beyond going to the Board of Directors, we're going all the way back to the beginning, the founding of Normal back in 1970 or 71, depending on how you count that. But we're joined by Normal's current legal counsel, a member of the board, and the founder of Normal, Keith Straub. Keith, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Russ. Always good to be with you.
Oh, it's good to have you here. And we wanted to bring you on just for kind of some general chat about, you know, the future as we're looking at it here from Normal's point of view. Normal has come out in endorsement of the Regulate, Control, and Tax Cannabis Act of 2010, the initiative on the California ballot to legalize personal possession and cultivation and give local governments the option to regulate and control the sales and distribution of cannabis. And I guess the first question right out of the gate is, what do you see in this initiative? Do you see a good chance of it passing, and how do you feel about it?
Well, first off, I would be delighted for any version of marijuana legalization to be passed by a state. Remember, our founding fathers talked about the states as being laboratories where the whole purpose was to experiment with different social policies and legal policies. And after there's a consensus that what seems to work, then the federal government may step in. And I think that's precisely what we need right now. So, number one, yes, of course, I support that legalization initiative in California. I realize it's not the only way we could legalize marijuana, and what I hope to see and expect to see is other legalization initiatives, perhaps in Oregon on the ballot, perhaps in Washington on the ballot, and I would imagine within the next 3 or 4 years, we will have the first couple of states that will have legalized marijuana. Now, as to the chance this year in California, we start off with a reasonable chance. The latest field poll showed 56% support. That's a little less than I wish we had. Usually you need about 8 to 10 points a lead going in, because once the issue's joined and your opponents begin to run their ads, obviously you lose some of your support. But I would guess right now we're either going to win it by a point or two or lose it by a point or two. And I can tell you that even if we lose it by a point or two, by 2012, it'll be back on the ballot, and by then we will definitely pass it, because the percentage of people supporting legalization continues to rise every year.
Well, let's think about the future here, and let's think good thoughts and say that it passes. It passes either in 2010 or 2012, regardless. How do you see things changing both in California and the surrounding states? I mean, if you've got one state that legalizes, like California is proposing to do, and the states nearby still have it as a prohibited substance, do you see that causing any problems, especially around the borders of these states? What does the future look like?
Well, I'm sure that there would be some people who would be caught crossing out of the state that has legalization into one of them that doesn't, and they'll be caught with some weed, and they will continue to be arrested and prosecuted. But that's not going to last very long. I mean, frankly, that's not much different than today, where you have 14 states or 13 states that have decriminalized marijuana. But if you go to a state next door and you've got an ounce of marijuana, you could still be arrested. What I think will really happen is, once a state like California, and I suspect either California or Massachusetts may likely be the first states to actually adopt legalization, once they begin to raise significant revenue from licensing and controlling and taxing marijuana, I think the estimate is in California they could make at least $1.4 billion a year in tax revenue, and frankly, I think that's somewhat understated. Well, you can imagine that if you're in Oregon or Washington, for example, where they're very progressive with their marijuana policies, and they see California making $1 billion plus a year, you can imagine the pressure on their state legislature to adopt a similar proposal. So I think it's really a tipping point. I think as soon as the first or second state legalized marijuana, you're going to see a whole run on states legalizing marijuana. And frankly, I expect by then we will get a bill passed in Congress that's similar to what the bill that was passed at the end of alcohol prohibition. The federal government did not say states must legalize alcohol, and I don't think they should say states must legalize marijuana. I think what we want the federal government to do is what they did back at the end of alcohol prohibition. Get out of the way, remove all federal laws pertaining to the subject, and let the states experiment with different methods of legalization. And frankly, those that wish to continue with criminal prohibition, they've got the right to do that, although I suspect within just a few years you would not have anyone left that was still arresting people for smoking marijuana. But I really do think it's an incredible tipping point. We've been talking about legalization since 1970 at Normal, and for the first 30 to 35 years, we didn't have very many people listening to us. It seemed kind of like a fantasy. But the last 3 or 4 years, there has been a major shift in public opinion and in the political debate, and I think we are very close to legalizing marijuana in America.
Now, again, looking at California post-legalization, we had the study in, we had the story in our news, and NPR took a look at the growers and the economy in the Emerald Triangle of California, Northern California there. And looking forward to when there is legal marijuana, one of the fears that I've heard voiced in California is people saying, well, R.J. Reynolds is going to come in, you know, Philip Morris is going to come in and mass produce bad weed, and it's going to be awful, and the economies will collapse in the Emerald Triangle, and everybody be out of work, and all these terrible doom and gloom. Do you see negatives from legalization like that, or any negatives maybe they haven't thought of that you want to think of?
No, I really don't. It seems to me like legalization benefits all of us. Now, I understand that there are people who've been taking a legal risk to cultivate and sell marijuana for years, and but for those people willing to take those risks, people like me who are marijuana smokers wouldn't have had anything to smoke. So I don't harbor any ill will towards the growers and the sellers. Thank God they're there. On the other hand, I do think that they need to realize that number one, there will likely be all kinds of systems set up where sometimes the state may license growers, other time the state may step out of it and just let private enterprise take over. But there will still be an important role for growers and sellers. I have no doubt about that. But even if not, my goodness, we had 850,000 Americans arrested last year on marijuana charges. So surely some grower in Humboldt County is not suggesting that his continuing to make a good income is more important than our stopping the arrest of responsible smokers. So I don't think that's really a big issue. I will say this. Excuse me. We knew when we started Normal that there would be, at some point, a split between the consumer issues or the people with the consumer interest and those who represent industry. And again, I don't mean representing industry to mean anything bad. It's just that Normal decided early on we wanted to be a spokesperson for responsible smokers. And it is true that as we get close to legalization and as states begin to propose different systems, there are going to be some people. For example, what if they have a felony record because they were busted early in their career? Well, most likely they're not going to be allowed to get a license, even in the medical marijuana states where they license dispensaries. In most cases, they will not give a license to someone who has a felony drug conviction. So there will be some people who are left out, I expect. But overall, it'll be a healthy system. There's always going to be a need for people with the expertise in growing. Frankly, even in those states where they've legalized dispensaries for medical use, they've got to have some people who know how to grow good quality marijuana. And that means a lot of those former illicit growers will then be brought in to grow in a legal way. Mm. And then I suppose, did I lose you?
Nope, we're still here, Keith.
No, I'm sorry. I heard a strange noise there. As I say, I don't think there's anything particularly difficult about the fact that the industry people may push in certain ways and will push in other ways. That's perfectly fine. All that's doing is talking about the best ways to run the industry. Nobody is going to be proposing that somebody go to jail for marijuana offenses, and that's the positive side.
All right. And we did get a couple questions here from our chat room, people who are listening in live right now. And Casper has a question that asks, with 14 states that have medical marijuana, shouldn't we start pushing for legalization rather than these measures of decriminalization to one extent or another?
Well, absolutely. Where there is the political support to get a bill introduced in the legislature, and I think we have legalization bills introduced in 5 different states this year, and I'm sure there will be many more next year, yes, I think it is time to take the focus away from simply medical use and, frankly, even away from simple decriminalization. It is time that we began a national debate over the merits of actually legalizing, regulating, and taxing marijuana. Now, by the way, there's one other point I should have mentioned a while ago when you were talking about the people who were concerned that if we get legalization, that R.J. Reynolds will come in and the big corporations and they'll produce weak marijuana. Normal has always insisted on the right of consumers to grow their own marijuana. It's not that I think most people will grow their own. They won't. It's more convenient to buy it. Most people don't have the time or the interest to develop the expertise. But if the legalization system, whether it's government or private, if they try to sell us marijuana that's either too expensive, too highly taxed, or too weak in quality, our answer is, the hell with you, we will grow our own. And the threat to do that will be sufficient to make sure those markets are responsive to consumers' needs. So again, as long as we have the right to grow our own, then I'm not worried about what kind of the legalization system. In fact, I would love to see several different types of systems tried. And the one in California is perfectly fine as a starter right now.
Excellent. Well, Keith Straub is the founder of Normal and is calling us from Washington, D.C. And one final question here. I'll just kind of paraphrase the question that came in from the chat room. Since the early 70s, since you've been working on this, we saw a great leap in support for marijuana legalization in the late 70s, only to see it fall when it hit the 80s and the Just Say No era. We're seeing a similar great increase in marijuana legalization here through the 2000s. Do you fear a backlash, or do you think this has nowhere to go but up?
Well, because I lived through those late 70s, remember when Normal was founded in late 1970 and the Marijuana Commission came out with their recommendation for decriminalization in 1972, Oregon was the first state to decriminalize in 72, and by 78 we'd had a total of 11 states. I think Nebraska was the last state. And at the time, we thought it was only 3, 4, 5 years and we would have the whole country decriminalized. Boy, were we surprised. The mood of the country, it wasn't a backlash exactly, it was a general mood of the country that shifted to a far more conservative swing. And when that mood of the country begins moving in the other direction, there's not a hell of a lot you can do but keep your head down and protect the turf that you've won already. So from 1978 until 1996, 18 years, we did not win a single statewide reform initiative. 18 years. But starting in 1996, when California legalized medical use, and right up through today, we have been, the mood of the country has been moving in our direction. The momentum seems to be picking up. So I am optimistic that that mood will continue in our direction. And if it does for another 5 years, we will have marijuana legalized in at least a handful of states. But I do recognize that you can't always see those changes coming, and we should not presume it's always going to move in our direction, because it won't. It never does. Political opinion is like a pendulum, and it swings for a while in one direction, and then it starts back. Mm-hmm. So it's very difficult to determine when it's going to go back the other way.
Well, Keith, again, thanks for joining us here on the show. I'm running out of time, unfortunately. I could talk to you all day. We'll have you back again real soon. Thanks so much.
Look forward to it, Ryan. Thanks.
All right, coming back after the break, a little bit of ranting. We're going to take a look at the rise of paramilitary SWAT raids in the United States of America. This on the heels of the tragic news of a 7-year-old killed in Detroit in one such raid. We're right back. Normal Show Live.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Normal Show Live is brought to you by our advertisers and supported by the generous tax-deductible donations of our listeners. If you'd like to make a monetary donation to the show, visit secure.normal.org/donate, fill in the dollar amount, and specify Normal Show Live in the comments. If you'd like to donate equipment or items to be used for prize promotions on the show, please send them to 4110 Southeast Hawthorne Boulevard, number 161, Portland, Oregon, 97214. If you need a receipt for tax deduction purposes, please indicate the value of the items you are donating. Thank you for contributing to the fight for your own freedom.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
You want answers?
You have offended my family.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth.
And you have offended Shaolin Temple.
You can't handle the truth.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious.
And don't call me Shirley.
Hoo-ah!
Radical rant.
All right, everybody, 49 after the hour, and we want to talk about the rise of paramilitary SWAT policing in America. Don't have a lot of time here, but definitely want to get a few things across. First of all, this is a subject that Radley Balco, he's a writer for the Reason magazine, also did this published paper on at the Cato Institute, the botched paramilitary police raids, an epidemic of isolated incidents, he called it. You can find the website at cato.org, that's C-A-T-O, cato.org/raid map. And this is really amazing. It's one of these Google maps, you know, where they can put the push pins in the map. He's got six different colors of pushpins: death of an innocent, raid on an innocent suspect, death or injury of a police officer, other examples of paramilitary police excess, death of a nonviolent offender, unnecessary raids on doctors and sick people. And the United States map is covered, except North Dakota. All states but North Dakota, covered with all of these pushpins of paramilitary SWAT raids, including my hometown of Nampa, Idaho, that I can click on here. In John Simpson's case, where police in Nampa, Idaho served a drug warrant, tossed a flashbang grenade into the home of Vietnam veteran John Simpson. The frightened Simpson first takes cover and attempts to protect his wife. He then composes himself, assumes he's being attacked by intruders, and immediately ventures out with the only weapon he can find, the hose from a vacuum cleaner. The police targeted the wrong side of Simpson's duplex. "I guess we're going to have to seek psychological help. I hate to say that," Simpson would later tell the Associated Press. "I'm not nuts or anything, but I'm still shaking. Put a shotgun next to your ear and pull the trigger to get an idea of the noise." Police later pick up Simpson's neighbor with 4 ounces of marijuana. So the police were going in here throwing grenades into a Vietnam veteran's house. Gee, I wonder how he might react to that. When it wasn't even his house, and over a quarter pound of marijuana. Over marijuana, we need to send in the SWAT. These are not isolated incidences. In fact, I pulled up from this the latest incidences from 2008 that were the death of an innocent or the raid on an innocent suspect for all states for 2008, and the website came up with 17 different incidences where there's no drugs found, it was an innocent suspect, it was a wrong address, whatever it might be. And of those 17, I found, let me see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, about 9 of them here for marijuana, where they were suspected of having marijuana on them. This is what has come to in the war on Americans here in this country, and these SWAT raids. 100 to 150 of these raids take place every day in America, using heavily armed automatic weapons, many times no-knock raids, under the suspicion that, well, and we heard this when we went over the Missouri SWAT dog-killing incident last week. We hear the explanation being, well, these drug traffickers are often known to have weapons and often known to be violent, right? So we're going to go barge into their homes in the middle of the night, and we're going to take them down with automatic weapons. Well, we can take a look at the actual facts here, because this weekend there was the Law Enforcement Memorial Day, basically, where they honor all of the police officers who's died in the line of duty. And they actually have a website, the Officer Down Memorial page. You can find it at odmp.org, Officer Down Memorial page, omdp.org. And we find only 3 law enforcement officers were killed enforcing drug laws last year. And those 3 were not undercover narcs doing drug buys or SWAT team raiders busting down doors, but DEA agents who died in a helicopter crash in Afghanistan. According to the historical data provided by the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund, which also compiles statistics on police line of duty deaths, last year's low death toll among officers enforcing the drug laws is not a fluke. In the decade between 78 and 88, an average 6.5 officers were killed each year. In the following decade, the number was 6.2. And in the last 10 years, an average of 4.3 officers were killed each year enforcing the drug laws. The single bloodiest year for drug law enforcement was 1988, when 12 officers died. In 2008, it was 7. In 2007, it was 4. In 2006, it was 5. In 2005, it was 4. When placed into context of the more than 1.5 million drug arrests made in each of those years, it is clear that the only one in every several hundred thousand drug arrests leads to an officer's death. During the past 10 years, the odds were less than 1 in 350,000. That's right. One officer death for every 350,000 drug law arrests. Now, this comes on the heels of sad news this weekend. Now, I will preface this by saying this was not in response to a drug law warrant. This was in response to a homicide investigation. But in response to a homicide investigation, Detroit police burst into the home and with flashbang grenades. This was in Detroit, Michigan, picking this up from CNN.com. and killed 7-year-old Ayanna Jones during a search warrant raid. They threw a flashbang grenade into the home, which landed on the girl as she laid on the couch sleeping, because this was executed at 40 minutes after midnight on Sunday. The flashbang grenade caught the blanket and the little girl on fire. The grandmother comes down from the, you know, hearing the extreme explosion and seeing her granddaughter in flames is trying to put her out. Police burst in. The police account says that the woman wrestled with the cop with his firearm, and that's when the firearm discharged and shot the girl in the head. The grandmother had to watch her daughter on fire get shot in the head by police serving this warrant. Now, again, this was not a drug warrant. They were investigating a 34-year-old man who was a suspect in the shooting of a 17-year-old high school student, and they had suspected he was hiding out in the home. And it has turned out that the police have caught the 34-year-old suspect. But this goes on. I mean, this just goes to show, once again, the police use of excessive force when it is not necessary or wise. And this goes all the way back to the federal government, which gives all sorts of grant money, burn grants and other types of grants, to local law enforcement agencies to military up their force, to get them all sorts of armored personnel characters and carriers and body armor and automatic weapons. And you can't have that stuff laying around if you're not going to use it every now and then. And that's exactly what they're doing, mostly to serve drug raid warrants. Now, in the case of marijuana, we go back to that Missouri SWAT shooting video that we played over last week, and the police in that cover-up there, as they're trying to cover their tracks, mention how they have to serve these warrants quickly before the suspects can possibly get rid of any evidence, which is basically a way of saying it is more important to put mothers and children and pets at risk of gunfire than to have a suspect flush some evidence. And again, if the warrant was for marijuana, like it was in the case of the Missouri SWAT dog shooting, when they were suspecting he was a large-scale dealer with lots and lots of marijuana, I would like to see the toilet that can flush large baggies of marijuana or large bales of marijuana. It's just not going to happen. It's because these guys get off on playing soldier. It's because they've been told that they're fighting the war on drugs. And you can only be told that you're fighting a war for so long without starting to think that you're a soldier and the people you're fighting are an enemy. And they continue to use tactics to dehumanize us cannabis users so it is easier to think of us as an enemy. Here's something to check out. Go to our blog at stash.normal.org. And go up to the search box and type in Stoners in the Mist. Just type those words into our search box, Stoners in the Mist. This is just one of many pieces of government propaganda that tries to paint us, the responsible cannabis consumers, as no good drains on society, a potential risk of running down a child or shooting a friend at any possible moment. And the more they continue to demonize us, the easier it is for these cops to think they're justified in breaking into our homes and shooting our pets and terrorizing our families. Enough is enough. We are responsible adults. We want to obey the laws. One of the things I keep hearing about medical marijuana is I see the backlash from some of these law enforcement groups where they say, oh, these medical marijuana laws are being abused. There's rampant cases of abuse. Well, what is the abuse of a medical marijuana law? Somebody who's not quite sick enough, going to the state, filling out paperwork, going to a doctor, getting more paperwork, paying money to the state, and doing everything they can to try to be legal? That's abuse. People that want to try to follow a law, people that want to try to put themselves under the supervision of doctors and authorities in our government, that's abuse. It's all one big ball of yuck, people, and we've got to keep working to unravel it. And every day here at Normal Show Live, we're going to keep doing that. Make sure you join us at 1 o'clock Pacific time every day, Monday through Friday. You can catch the replays at 3, 5, 7, and 9 Pacific time. You can download us on iTunes. Just look for the Normal Daily Audio Stash. You can play us on demand at our blog, stash.normal.org. Got any other questions? Send them to me by email, stash@normal.org. For Ganja John and Cannabis Carrie, I'm Radical Russ, and until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Take it on one more time. You take a seat, you plant it, you grow it, you join it.